Hold on.
The Army values. The Warrior ethos. Coaching and therapy. This is Warrior Leadership.
This is Warrior Leadership. Welcome to another episode of Warrior Leadership. Before we go into the content, I want to start off by saying I'm looking for people to join a cohort, a six-week-long program, to learn the basics of leadership development as a team with up to 15 other people. And if you go to Amazon.com, this is a snippet of what I teach. If you want to know more, you got to take my class, though. But anyway, DB has a quick plug he wants to throw in there, I believe, as well. And then we're going to talk about our episode today.
Awesome. So I want to talk about real quick is my Man Cave support group. I have a virtual cohort for those who are not locally here to the Central Valley of California, a virtual option. Then I have an in-person option for those that are in the Central Valley, specifically Fresno. I actually only have 4 more slots for those that are in person, and I'm looking to fill up the virtual option. So Man Cave support group is a place where, you know, individual men can come and work through man issues that we face as men. So,
and if you want to find out any more about that, just say, I want to find out more below this video, and I will ask you what the heck you're talking about, because we just said a lot of things. And then if it's DB's program, I'll refer you to him. Or if he catches it before I do, he'll just talk to you. Anyway, today on Warrior Leadership, we're going to talk about relationship dynamics. And that means so many things. But I'm going to let DB go into it first, because he's the best conversation starter in the entire world. So what you got today?
Thank you. I love that, man. So, you know, with topics like this, man, I nerd out on stuff like this, and I like to give definitions. I think it's important, right? So, you know, I think when you think about family dynamics or relationship dynamics, it's really referring to patterns and interactions among relatives and their different roles and responsibilities and the various factors that shape those interactions. So what sticks out to me the most in that is patterns, right? These patterns of behavior that we learn because we are social creatures. We learn these patterns of behaviors over time, and then we begin to take those patterns into our relationships in the future, which is very powerful when you think about it in terms of shaping our development.
Oh man, and relationship dynamics, it can mean so many things. So I'm going to put a spin on that, and I'm going to talk about leadership. But before I do that, I noticed we have a couple people tuning in today. Please engage in conversation. If you have a question about anything we're saying, or if you want to, or if you just want to throw a random comment out there that seems like it might be worth discussing, bring it on. You know, we love engaging with the crowd. It's one of our favorite things to do as part of this show. Anyway, so from a leadership standpoint, when I think of relationship dynamics, it's what is that relationship between a manager or a supervisor and that execution level employee? Well, you know, I know DB's brought up how those people could be father or mother figures in the past, but what role do you actually play in that relationship? Does that person work for you? Does that execution level employee, does that person work for you? Well, I'm going to have to say no. So that really, when you are in a supervisory role or a leadership role, as a lot of people like to call it, although not everybody's a leader, I think a lot about that dynamic being you're just a member of the team, but you hold more responsibility. And so your role as the leader is the most important on that team, because you're accountable for everything, but you also play the biggest support function on that team, because you have to make sure everybody has everything they need to be able to accomplish their mission as it pertains to not only what you do on your team, but the entire company.
Right. You know, and that part that you just mentioned, Coach, about everything that they need and feel supported, I want to hone in on that because I think some managers and our leaders believe that they don't have that responsibility in terms of support. It's not, they think, they believe that it's like productivity, productivity, productivity. Well, the problem with that is that when people have these difficult family upbringings, again, what we just read in family dynamics, they bring that into the working relationship. We've talked about this before when we think about praise, different things like that that are important to people, and psychological safety, bringing up things, right? A lot of that has to do with these relationship dynamics or family dynamics that we're talking about. And so if that individual doesn't feel supported, if they don't feel connected, then they're gonna, your numbers might look right up front, but in the long run, you look at different things like attrition, you know, where, whether or not, you know, and we know this already, when you think of companies, like it costs a lot more money to continue to retrain people after already investing all that money and time with them. And then when they leave, all that wisdom and information leaves as well. And so sometimes I don't know if, as companies, I don't know if they add up that cost factor to it, but a lot of that can be really, really go back to that whole, this whole idea of family dynamics and how do we incorporate this idea of family and within the work that we do? Because again, most people spend majority of their time at work. You know, your work is a second family. How many times have you heard people jokingly say my work wife or my work husband? Like that's a real thing in 2024, man. Like,
it's always been a real thing.
I hear it all the time now, though. I'm like, wow, you got a work husband? Like my aunt one time jokingly talked about her work husband, and she called him one day, and he's an Asian guy, and he's like, you know, he's there. He's there for my auntie. They support each other. They have each other's back. And so I think, you know, you see that on the lower level within companies, I think. But then even with families, right? In families, there's always if you have like a little sister, that little sister is probably going to be closer with the younger cousins, and they probably feel out of the loop with the older brothers and sisters and the aunts and stuff like that. And so, again, that those roles and responsibilities, that if we don't deal with those things through therapy or through just working through it in any way, then we bring that dynamic into the workplace, man.
We do. And so there's one major thing there. First of all, everyone deserves to be treated with respect, and you don't get paid more for being a jerk. So I don't know why some people do that. But there's a key thing that needs to be understood while we're talking about all of this, and then we can duck away from it really, really fast too, unless you want to dive deeper into it. But at work, those people, as close as you may be in the workplace or outside of work, they are not your family, because you can't fire family. I mean, you can stop talking to them, but you can't fire family. So there is a dynamic that goes along with that. And I hate that it causes fear in the workplace, but it does. And I think that dynamic in itself is one worth noting. But let's move from that, because that's a very dark way of thinking about it, but it's very true. So you actually have professional obligations to deal with things a certain way, because there are legal ramifications if you don't. That's why you have a human resource section. If human resources wouldn't exist, if people didn't get burned and the company didn't lose out or whatever the case may be, I mean, there are just certain laws out there that need to be followed at work. But now back to the human factor. At the end of the day, you have to treat everyone with respect. You have to make sure that they are all dealt with differently, because everyone has a different personality. And you have to, at the end of the day, you still treat people the same way as you would. I mean, obviously you deal with people at home different than you would at work, but you still have to deal with things the same way, in that, you know, everyone is different. You can't treat your daughter like you treat your son. Well, you can't treat Joe Snuffy like you would treat Jane Doe. I mean, everyone has a different quality to bring to the table, and they have strengths and weaknesses. So understanding all of that first, before you dive into the relationship part, means that you need to support everybody differently.
Mm-hmm.
I said a lot there.
No, you did. And you know, I think one of the points that I had here is just when you think about a secure and supportive environment, right? And what that looks like. And it's one that is built on some very important things where, you know, there is a, you know, this love for one another, this advice, being able to give advice, and care, right? The man caring for someone, that how, like, people want to feel cared for. Literally, I was talking to one of my Vietnam era veteran friends, and you know, he told me about, he's like, man, one of the things that I always look for when I come into a hospital or I go to the grocery store or wherever I go, even if I know that you can't do anything to help me, I need you to care. You know, and I think that's important, man. That was powerful to hear him say that. And I think that goes to this idea of like the value of human relationship. And so like within family dynamics or within any group dynamics, I think it's easy for us to be selfish, you know. And I know we're going to segue in a few weeks to talk about selflessness, man. And within family dynamics, you know, there's always, you know, certain within that group, there's individuals that are only out for themselves. And I think that's really what, when you speak about leadership and you think about the work with companies, it's like when you're not focusing on the needs of those people, and you talk a lot about this, Coach, which is we have to put our team first. Like if you're not putting your team first, you're not a leader, you know? And we talked about this earlier about how there's certain things that us as leaders, we've given up certain things because we have to be a model. We have to be an example. And that is our role as a leader. And I think sometimes people want to change the role and the responsibility and recreate their own and go against tried and true wisdom. But the reality is what works, man, what's tried and true, you got to stick with it, man. And that is the value of human relationship always as that leader.
And you know what? I'll be honest with you. I don't want somebody on their team that's not willing to put the mission and the other people that they're working with ahead of their own personal interests, because anybody who has that level of ego they're going to be toxic. They still might have a place. Maybe. But at the end of the day, we need people to be willing to sacrifice a little bit of their self-interest to be able to go out there and do certain things. Everyone wants to be a boss. I mean, you hear people say all the time, I could do that job better than JJ does, or I could do that job better than Derek, or whatever the case may be. Well, that's fine. Maybe you could, but the fact that you're saying that means I wouldn't want you in that position, because you're obviously more interested in what you have in your mind than you are for what you're being asked to do. And right. At the end of the day, if you want to be a leader, you have to be able to follow first. You have to be able to sit back, take the orders, understand your place there first, work within a team dynamic, and then move on and take that same selfless mentality and now lead the team. Mm-hmm. If you can't do that, you don't belong in a management position at all, because right. All you're going to do is you're going to destroy whatever that team could have been. And so when it comes to a family dynamic, if you're only interested in what you're doing in your own head, if you only have your self-interest in mind, it's going to destroy the family dynamic too. There are selfish parents out there that destroy their kids. It's the same thing. You have to be selfless to be a leader. So that's one thing that a lot of people fail. And if you want to create influence, because the civilian definition of leadership is to to be able to influence somebody to do something or to complete a task. And that means that you convince them that it's important, and then they go out and execute it as if they want to do it. Influence, that's basically what it is.
Right.
If that's not your goal, that's all I'm going to say. Think about it.
Yeah, and you know what? You made another good point. And within that, you talked about the individual that's following and their role. Remember, family dynamic has to do with roles and interactions with each other. And so sometimes the individual also has to know how to follow. You know, sometimes people don't want to be told what to do, right? And so if you don't want to be told what to do, you have to check that if that's your role within the family system. Each one of us has a role, a very important role to play. And so that's important as well. I think the next point that I kind of wrote down is there's this study called the Adverse Childhood Experience Study, and it's ACES. And what's interesting is that the whole idea of ACES has to do with toxic stress experienced by a child. So that whole study, it refers back to family dynamics. Every single question on that assessment has to do with negative interactions within a family system. And so, you know, you think about that and you say, wow, man, like in this study, what's interesting is that I think we kind of already have known intuitively that obviously toxic stress can contribute to poor outcomes later on in life, right? But when this groundbreaking study came out, I believe it was through Kaiser, you know, and this is with mostly middle class people in America, you know, then it begs the question, what does this same study look like with all of America? This idea of adverse childhood experiences. And then when you look at that, then you say, well, man, what percentage of the population have negative family dynamics going on? Right. And that's where when we start thinking about certain individuals that, like, I've worked with people in therapy, man, where they're very driven, they're very, like, goal-oriented, and you would be surprised their why. If you ask some people what is their why, you know, they, and I can even look at myself in this, is that sometimes we're driven so that way we can get approval from our family systems. A lot of cultures, it is that way, and that where, you know, jokingly, I was looking at something on Facebook today. It was like, parents from the Caribbean islands be like, you know, and it said the kid got a 99 out of 100. And the dad was like, I see you're missing one. What's going on? And I laughed at that because truthfully, I don't know if that's just within that culture. I think that can be a lot of people's experience, right? And that and so what was interesting, again, that's family dynamics. And sometimes what we think is healthy can be very unhealthy to that child. And so, you know, I'm really big on that, man, because, you know, Frederick Douglass said it the best, man. It's easier to basically repair, you know, broken children than men. And so once we get a certain age, and this is with women too, once we get to a certain place in life, it's harder to repair some of the damage that has been done within family systems, man, because it has a lasting effect on people. 90% of the people who I work with in therapy practice are there because of some underlying family issue and trauma that they're still dealing with. And that again, that's affecting work life. So they could come in and say, I have this issue with work going on, this horrible boss I'm dealing with. Well, you start digging underneath the iceberg and you still beefing with your mom and dad, man. So you don't know how to deal with conflicts and you don't know how to act within a team or in a family system, so to speak. And so that's why I think family, when we say family dynamic and group dynamics, to me, they're like interchangeable. I mean, what's the difference? Still a group of people.
It is. It is a group of people coming together to get a job done. I say that over and over and over again. And that's all a business is. And if you take your mind away from the tasks and statistics for a couple of minutes and you look at what the actual relationship dynamic is between the leader and the follower, and then figure out what's going on with each one of those people on the teams that are underperforming, you're going to find that a lot of those icebergs that we talk about a lot of the time, those deeply seated issues come from the childhood. Yes. The narrative that a person speaks to themselves about themselves in their mind, that is often not necessarily the narrative that they created. It's the narrative that they were told as a young child, whether it was by their family, or maybe that could have been told, you know, very influential teacher at one time. I know that I know people that said that when they were in high school, they didn't do well because they had a handful of teachers that would constantly tell them, you know, I already know that you guys aren't going to do well with this. Well, what kind of a teacher does that? You're supposed to encourage, teach, and then let them work it out on their own. Of course, you're going to have under and overachievers. That's just the dynamic of a class. But when it comes to family, it hits home even more. And that family, by the way, might not be mom and dad. It could be uncle or grandma or grandpa, or it could even be a best friend when they were children that just betrayed them. And so those things last past childhood. And sometimes those people that are in those positions don't even know that that's where that narrative comes from. They just know that in this moment in time, I'm having a hard time and I'm mad at you because you don't understand me. Well, relationship dynamics go deep. And so it makes it very, very difficult. I've worked with people like that. You know, when I retired from the military, people in the military really aren't that different than civilians. When you take apart that, you know, the green suit that we wear and, you know, the hat and the weapon that we go and qualify with all the time and the relationships we make when we're downrange, honestly speaking, relationship dynamics are the same in the service as they are out of the service. And so, yeah, you might not be able to go as many layers deep with your people when you're not in the military as you could when you were, because I would say that we ate together, we slept together, we showered together sometimes. Don't get any negative thoughts when I say that, but I can already tell you listeners have your mind in the gutter. Stop it. Anyway, no, but you know, in the civilian world, you can still go layers deep. People still have problems just like they do in the military. Sometimes the military problems are caused because of service. Oh, well, guess what? If people think all managers are bad in the civilian workforce, that comes from somewhere too. That's because they had one bad experience after another bad experience after another bad experience. So it's not different. A good manager can take that situation, that negative situation, and turn it into a positive just by saying, hey, look, you have a bad attitude and a chip on your shoulder every day. Let's go behind closed doors and we're going to discuss this. I don't know what you've been told in the past or what kind of relationships you've had with your boss in the past, but here it's going to be different. It opens people's eyes and they might not open up to you that day, but if you continuously have conversations and try to address these things, they will. It's like therapy, but I'm not asking anybody to be a therapist. It's just getting to know your people. Yeah. So, you know, I'm an executive leadership coach. So the thing that I deal with all the time is people that are in these management roles and they're in it for the first time. And they tell me all the time, they're like, hey, how do I deal with somebody who has had nothing but bad managers? I'm just starting here. I've never even had anybody work for me before. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, start the right way. That's what I will tell you. Do you care about people that you work with? Well, yeah. Do you want to get to know those people? Oh gosh, that's hard. Well, you're going to have to do it. And this is what you do, A, B, C, and D. And it's just as easy as having regular conversations and scheduled conversations. I've talked a lot. What do you think about that?
No, I think that sounds healthy, man. I mean, that definitely, again, it comes down to roles and responsibilities. You have to learn how to set boundaries with people and work with people. And like I could say, you know, as a leader, it's the difference between being friendly and being someone's friend, right? I think that sometimes that, you know, sometimes that happens within therapeutic relationship, right? Where I'm a very friendly person naturally, right? And I have empathy and warm regard for people. And so sometimes, you know, people try to cross that boundary of me as the leader therapist, right? And them as the client, they want to cross that boundary. And it's like, well, we're not friends. But and so, but that's, I think that's healthy though, to teach people how to interact with each other and be able to like be comfortable with that. That's hard. And again, I think that's related to these ideas of group dynamics and family dynamics. How do I act when I'm around people? I've had people tell me stuff like, I don't know how to make friends, Mr. Brown. Like when I was a kid, I always struggled with making friends. So what do you do when you get, when you become an adult and you know you need that social interaction, but you've been so used to being like a recluse and kind of to yourself? How do you start to make connections with people, man? It's hard. It's a challenge. And so, yeah, I think the last thing that I kind of put here, man, is that family dynamics are so important that they have impacts on our overall health, different illnesses that we might have, and even our recovery outcomes.
Mm-hmm.
You know, those family dynamics are that important. And so if we are having issues within our family systems, it is in our best interest to work those things out. I know that over and over again, I've had to drink my own tea, man. I've had situations that have come up in my life while I was a counselor, and I pride myself on being, number one, being transparent and genuine, but also living out the life that I try to, that I ask the people that I work with to do. So one of the things that's very important with family dynamics is forgiveness. If we don't forgive our families, our groups, when people make mistakes and we hold on to that bitterness and that unforgiveness in our heart, it, number one, it stifles our growth. And then it makes that relationship even harder because now we don't have a working relationship because there's no trust. And we have to be able to work with even if they're a coworker. You don't like, it's not always about liking someone. You may not like their ways and you may not like the way they go about doing things, but if it's a certain department at your job and this person is like a high performer, right? And you know they're not going anywhere, guess what? You can't circumvent them. You have to work with them. And I've had situations in my life like that where in the work environment as well, I was speaking about my family before, but even in the work environment where I couldn't circumvent the person. And if they did something to offend me, I had to forgive, but I also had to go back and work with them. And so, because that was their role and that role wasn't going to change and I couldn't get around them. So, you know.
Yeah. And the most wonderful thing about forgiveness, and this is what a lot of people fail to understand, and I know you and I talk about this all the time, you don't forgive people for them. You forgive people for you. Because when you build up hate in your own heart and contempt in your own heart, it turns happiness into sludge, and you end up being this you end up turning into the type of person that just gets upset about everything because you don't ever purge. Forgiveness is not for anybody else but you. And so you don't have to completely forget what that person did. I mean, you should to a certain extent, but expect people to be who they are, but don't hate them for what they did. Everyone is different and they have a different reason for acting the way they do. You don't know that. You don't know what their past is. You don't know what their icebergs are. So why are you going to hold that against them? You don't have to be their friend. You don't have to invite them over on the weekends. You don't have to go down to the bars with them or go bowling with them or anything like that. But the one thing that everybody does deserve is respect. And being able to put your personal feelings aside as part of servant leadership. Moving forward with just common courtesy and respect. You know, there's that saying, fake it to make it. Well, that applies in this situation too. You don't have to like somebody to work with them, but you do have to put your personal feelings aside to make sure you're getting the job done. And you don't have to do it for them. You have to do it for you, and you have to do it for the sake of the team. And if you're not willing to do that, you know, there's definitely some more that you probably need to work on, and DB might be your man. But, you know, that's just, forgiveness is not for them. It's for you always. And we hit 30 minutes. Do you have any closing comments that you would like to share with the team? And no, by the way, don't be shy, everybody. I know it's the end of the conversation, but we are so happy that you're watching our show, and we want you to come back next week and every week after that. So don't be shy. We would love to hear your to read your comments, put them up here and talk about them. Anyway, closing comments, DB?
No, sir. Everyone have a good evening.
Everybody take care. Nothing but love for y'all. This wraps up our episode on relationship dynamics. If you like what you heard, please like the video, subscribe to the channel, repost this, share it, whatever, all the little things that you have to do to acknowledge that it exists and tell people that you enjoyed it. But the most important thing is to keep the conversation going. So put a comment below the video after the stream is over or whenever you see this. And just let us know what you thought. Tell us what you would like to talk about and keep the conversation going about, in this case, relationship dynamics. We'll see you all next time.